I mean, the benefits of exercise are so clear and beyond debate. I think we almost don't have to talk about that anymore. But if you view that into a context of how few people actually exercise, it's quite dramatic. So I've seen research that suggests that less than 5% of Americans meet the government guidelines for aerobic exercise. And given how well-founded our understanding is, how beneficial exercise is really quite shocking. And then if you ask people why they don't exercise, and that's survey after survey, the number one answer is, I don't have time.
Hello, Bettys. Welcome back to another episode of Better with Dr. Stephanie. It's me, your host, Dr. Stephanie Estima. And today I'm bringing you a conversation all about cardiorespiratory fitness, VO2 max, speed training, type 2 fiber, zone 2 training, all the goods with co-founder, CEO and co-founder of the Carol Bike, Ulrich Demfle. We talk about the Carol Bike in this episode. It is one of my most favorite pieces of equipment other than weights. and I wanted to have him on the show to discuss VO2 max, how speed is something that we, one of the first things that we lose as we age, even before we lose strength. And we talk about VO2 max, what drives VO2 max, how to partition your time between high and low intensity exercise. We talk about the research around reduced exertion HIIT training or re-HIIT, sometimes also referred to as super maximal interval training, which is distinct from high intensity interval training. We talk about moderate intensity exercise, being as good as vigorous intensity exercise, and then how, let's say, a perimenopausal woman might structure her workouts to improve her VO2 max, which is one of the more important metrics that we look at for longevity. We also talk about the phosphocreatine system, the glycolytic pathway, all of the juicy, sciencey geekiness that you've come to enjoy on the show. And we talk about this in context with the Carol Bike as well. So for those of you that are interested in learning more about the Carol Bike, you can head over to www.carolbike.com and use the promo code BETTER. That's for the podcast name, BETTER. And I look forward to hearing about how you love this bike. This has been a piece of equipment that I don't normally rave about cardio equipment. I'm being honest with you. This is a game changer for myself, for my children, my son. I talk about this a little bit in the podcast as well, and for my husband as well. So without further delay, please enjoy my conversation with Ulrich Demfle. One of my goals this year is to make it my best year ever with my skin. And one of the ways that I'm doing that is with the Boncharge Red Light Neck and Chest Mask. Wrinkles, acne, scarring, skin roughness, loss of collagen and elastin happen in the face and in the neck and the décolletage area on our chest where the skin is very thin and susceptible to skin damage. I think at this point we're all pretty good about putting sunscreen on our face, but so many of us miss the neck and the chest area too. I use the Boncharge neck and chest mask daily for about 10 minutes in the morning while I'm checking emails. Their red and near infrared light waves together penetrate up to 5 to 10 centimeters below the skin surface. The red light reaches the skin's top layers and the NIR light targets the deeper tissues without UV exposure. And that's going to help reduce the fine lines, wrinkles, and to help ramp up collagen and elastin production. So I want you to head over and have your best skin with me this year. Go to boncharge.com/better. That's BETTER. And use the discount code BETTER at checkout. And that's going to give you 15% off your entire cart. Transform your health and fitness with the Carol Bike, the smartest, most effective exercise backed by science. You can experience unparalleled results in just a minimum of 15 minutes per week, per week, thanks to AI personalized workouts tailored to your age and your fitness level. You will increase fat loss, train up your strength and your speed, and have better energy, something that every woman, including myself, absolutely covets. I always say that women are the original biohackers. If there is a way for us to feel better and look better, we are all over it. Carol Bike, in my opinion, is one of the best pieces of cardio equipment that you can invest in. Studies prove that Carol helps you achieve a 12% increase in cardio fitness, lowers the risk of type 2 diabetes by 62%, and reduces blood pressure by 5% in as little as 8 weeks. Begin your transformation with the Carol Bike today and enjoy $100 off using the promo code BETTER for our beautiful Better Podcast listeners. That's B-E-T-T-E-R. All you have to do is visit carolbike.com. Ulrich Demfle, I am thrilled to welcome you to the Better Podcast. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
I am so happy to have you here. And I actually wanted you on the show because I am very excited. It's been a while since I've been really excited about a piece of equipment, and I wanted to have you on the show to talk about the Carol Bike, which is a product that you are you're the founder of the company and of the product, which we're going to talk about. But it takes a lot to get me excited about something, particularly something that's not weight training. We're going to talk a little bit about why. But let's maybe just start by defining the Carol Bike. What is it, and then why is it maybe different from, let's say, another run of the mill, or maybe not run of the mill, but any other type of exercise bike that's on the market?
Sure, absolutely. So Carol Bike is the smartest and most effective exercise bike. And it's been scientifically proven to give you double the health and fitness benefits in 90% less time compared to regular moderate intensity cardio. And it achieves that through simple and AI personalized workouts that are really suitable for any age and fitness levels. And the workouts, there's a variety of them, but our core workout can be done in as little as 5 minutes. So it's incredibly short and incredibly time efficient. And you really only work hard for 2 20-second sprints. And that helps you basically develop a sustainable habit for a fitter, healthier you.
There's so much in there that I want to pack. So I know unpack that. I know everyone that's listening is like, did he say 90% less time? And then did he just say 5 minutes? And then wait, did he even break that down and say 40 seconds, 2 times 20-second sprints?
I know.
A member of my team first introduced me to the Carol Bike, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, there's no way that you can get any kind of benefit 2 by 20 seconds, and that's it. And then I was talking to a mutual friend of ours, Dave Asprey, about it. And I am a convert. So first, before we get into the science of it, I want to just maybe speak to all the type A personalities that are listening, myself included, who think that cardio has to hurt. Cardio has to be like egregiously long. It has to be 45 minutes, 60 minutes each session. Mm. And I'm not poo-pooing that. I think that, you know, we'll talk about zone two training, and we'll talk about zone one and two training in a moment. But the limbic resistance, I'll say it that way, like the amount of friction that you have to overcome to get on the bike for 5 minutes is much less than the psychological friction, let's say, where you know you're going to be on the stair mill or the bike or the treadmill or whatever for the next 45 or 50 minutes.
Absolutely.
So I just want to talk about that, and maybe you can expand on that as well in terms of feedback that you've heard from Carol Bike users, or maybe yourself, your team, where there is I call it limbic resistance, psychological resistance to just getting on the bike for 5 minutes and kind of punching it out, and then you're done. Like, you don't even sweat most times. Like that 2 by 20 rehit, which we'll define in a moment, most times I don't even break a sweat, so I don't have to shower and, you know, change my clothes and all of that. So can you speak a little bit about the psychological benefits of such a short workout?
Sure. So I avoided, when I introduced the Carol Bike, to say it's an easy workout. It's simple, it's very short, but it's effective because you work for those 2 20-second sprints at maximum intensity. So it's really super maximal intensity, as hard as you can for 2 20-second sprints. And that is quite hard, especially in the beginning. You get used to it, and that makes it a lot easier. And our users, and we see that in our data because it's all connected, manage to create a habit. And now what I attribute that to, and there I talk about how it feels to me and like some anecdotal feedback I get back is, if you push hard for 20 seconds, the pain really only kicks in the last like 5 seconds or so. And by the time you really exerted yourself and you've, let's call it, you feel the pain, the sprint is already over. Now, I do a range of exercise. I actually quite enjoy exercise. And most weekends I also go for a run, 5 to 10K run. And because of my nature, my personality, I try to get a decent time. But with a 5K run, I have to push myself every step and continuously for like 20, 25 minutes. I have to push myself every step. So I find that psychologically way harder than getting on the bike, having a really short warm up that's very casual, and then pushing really hard for 20 seconds. And as soon as the pain kicks in, it's basically the sprint is over. I have a recovery for up to 3 minutes, another 20 second sprint again, pain kicks in and it's over. And then I recover for 3 minutes. So I find it a lot easier to do. That may not be the same for everybody, but it's, we have thousands of users for whom it is like that. And that makes it an easy habit. It's very easy to fit into your life. And it's also, so exercise is good. Yeah. And I love lifting weights. I don't so much love going for a run, but I do it still. And Monday to Friday, I do the Carol, these sprint trainings. And that works for me. It's become such a habit that I don't have to negotiate with myself to get on the bike. It's like I brush my teeth in the morning. I just get on the bike. It takes me maybe 5-6 minutes and I'm done with it. And I've got my cardio workout covered for the day. And that's just makes it easy, even though I shy away from using that term.
Well, I would say that it's simple. It's not easy, absolutely. Right? So yeah, it is, you know, that super maximal. So for the 20 seconds that you're sprinting, you are working. It's an all out sprint. It's everything that you've got. Mm-hmm. And as you said, it really is maybe 5 seconds for you. I would say like 7 to 9 seconds for me, like waiting for it to be over. But yeah. I think that what you're talking about here and the whole premise psychologically, and I wanted to start with the psychological aspect of it first, does adhere to the tiny habits principles that we hear from BJ Fogg and some of these very well-known behavioral psychologists in terms of, and you've said it a couple of times, creating a habit. Because we do, you know, if we have to always overcome this limbic resistance and we have to like muster up the motivation to get on the bike for 45 minutes, 3 times, 4 times, 5 times a week, the likelihood of that behavior being applied over a long delta is very low versus it's just a 5 minute ride. And then one of the features, we'll talk about it later, but I love it, is, you know, you do the first 20 seconds and then you can wait the 3 minutes if you want. And then you can kind of start it, you know, if you're like, okay, I feel like I'm recovered now. Like I kind of want to get back into the next, I want to do the next sprint. It has that little checkered flag thing that you can like, surpass it. And then you can like start the sprint at your own time. So I think that this is really important for the vast majority of individuals who are trying to start and keep, like, it's, you know, it's one thing to start a habit, right? Everyone can start. Mm-hmm. It's the problem. The problem is sort of following through on it and the consistency. So I really love this small little tiny habit where you're not sweating. Like most of the times I don't break a sweat with those re-hit workouts. And then if I want to have a longer workout, let's say I do that little re-hit and then I'll jump into a zone 2 for, I'll make sure that I get my little speed in there. And then I'll jump into a zone 2. You can certainly do that if you've planned for it, but you don't need to, right? So that's, I wanted to maybe start with that because I think that the psychology around exercise and kind of getting your butt on the bike is like 90%. Yeah. Of the effort that sort of, you know, that will yield some of the results. And the last 10 is, you know, the 2x20 or, you know, whatever workout that you're planning on doing that day.
Yeah. That's correct. And I mean, the benefits of exercise are so clear and beyond debate. I think we almost don't have to talk about that anymore. But if you view that into a context of how few people actually exercise, it's quite dramatic. So I've seen research that suggests that less than 5% of Americans meet the government guidelines for aerobic exercise. And given how well-founded our understanding is, how beneficial exercise is really quite shocking. And then if you ask people why they don't exercise, and that's survey after survey, the number one answer is, I don't have time. Now, there's a debate whether that's an honest answer or not. Some people say, no, it's not about time. It's about joy or pleasure or whether laziness. We actually choose to believe people when they say they have no time, because the competition for time is so intense. There's so many other things you can do with your time, whether it's like reels, podcasts, of course, Netflix. There's so many things that compete for your time that people sleep less, and like really fundamental things. And so we believe giving people a really time efficient choice to work out, and then to build a habit based on that time efficient workout, might actually help people and hopefully shift the needle and address this inactivity epidemic, really.
And I, you know, there's a meme that I saw not too long ago. Actually, I was prepping for this podcast and I was looking at like cardio memes, and it was like, would you like to exercise for 1 hour a day, or would you like to be dead for 24 hours a day? Like, which one would you, it was like a patient and a doctor having an interaction. Yeah, yeah. And in the Carol, you know, in Carol Bikes, like, would you like to exercise for 5 minutes a day, or would you like to be dead for 24 hours a day? Right. Yeah. And so I think that that's important. And I'd like to maybe wade into the science a little bit of the Carol Bike and why the short duration, like what we're actually talking about here, mm-hmm. in terms of conferring a benefit. You know, you said when we sort of opened, you said like 90% less time in this 2x20. So let's talk a little bit about what's happening there. So we have this supra maximal, you call them rehit. Maybe we'll just define like the rehit workout. What do we mean mm-hmm. by rehit? And then let's talk a little bit about what's happening at the level of the mitochondria. We can talk a little bit about muscle fiber type if you'd like, and then we can maybe explain it that way to the listeners.
Sure, absolutely. So rehit, that's the name of this core workout protocol, that stands for reduced exertion high intensity interval training. And most people will be familiar with HIIT, and rehit is just a evolution, like a more advanced version of HIIT, because HIIT is clearly very effective, but most people find HIIT actually quite hard to do. If you have a 25-30 minute session, it's also not that time effective, not that time efficient. And so rehit was developed by scientists looking for the minimal effective dose of cardio exercise. This hasn't been invented by us. We're standing on the shoulders of giants. There's very renowned and solid professors around the world and academic centers that have researched that and confirmed that 2 20-second sprints is actually sufficient to create a very powerful training stimulus. And if we dive into what the actual mechanism is, what triggers that adaptation, it's really important to keep in mind. You don't get fit during the workout. You get fit in the recovery. So in the workout, you create a training stimulus and you want to trigger a response. And the response and the adaptation, that happens after the workout when you recover and in your rest period. So the training really just has to create that stimulus. And in rehit, that is achieved through these short maximum intensity sprints. And what happens is your energy demand in those sprints goes up by about a factor of 100 compared to rest. So you have a very steep increase in energy demand. And your normal aerobic system just can't provide enough energy in the short term to meet that need. So the first 10 seconds of the sprint, you use what's called your phosphocreatine energy system, and you utilize that to create ATP and then basically engage your muscles and move and use your muscles. That's very, very fast, but is depleted after about 10 seconds. And then to continue going, you need to tap into your anaerobic energy system and burn muscular glycogen. So glycogen is a storage form of sugar that's stored in your muscles and in your liver. And to meet this immediate severe increase in energy demand, the body has to mobilize muscular glycogen. And here the important thing is it's the mobilization of that glycogen that matters. So studies have shown that you mobilize about 25 to 30% of your muscular glycogen in your legs. Now, that's a phenomenal amount of energy that could keep you going for a really long time.
And that's in the 20 seconds. So we've gone from the phosphocreatine system, which is like the Usain Bolt 100-meter dash, about 10 seconds.
Correct. Yes.
And then the glycolytic system that you're talking about kicks in about 10 seconds later. And then, okay, so this is about 20 seconds in total, and then a 25% to 30% of the glycogen that we're utilizing in that glycolytic pathway is from the legs.
So we're mobilizing it. We're mobilizing it.
Okay.
We're actually utilizing it, like burning a tiny fraction of that. So the reason why you don't sweat terribly much is because you burn relatively little energy, and the burning of energy increases your body temperature. So, but as you go into this sprint and you switch on the intensity levels from 1 to 100, your body doesn't know whether this is for 20 seconds or for a minute or for 3 minutes or 5 minutes. So what we're basically trying to do is simulate an emergency situation, like a fight or flight situation, or like where you have to run for your life or fight for your life. And in response to this rapid ramping up of energy demand, the body mobilizes a lot more glycogen than it actually needs. And glycogen is a relatively big molecule. And it just nibbles out of the outer branches of this branched polysaccharide. So we use only very little during the sprint. And that's really the clever thing about the exercise, about the workout. The signal to the body is triggered by the mobilization. There's a little bit of hypothesis, but this is how the leading researchers think it works. With the glycogen, with the stored glycogen, there's a bound molecule called AMPK that gets released as the glycogen gets mobilized. And AMPK, that triggers physiological adaptations afterwards. And it releases and activates downstream a further molecule, PGC1-alpha, which is the master regulator for mitochondrial biogenesis. And so these short sprints basically trigger a signaling cascade that tell your body to get fitter and stronger and, for example, develop more and larger mitochondria. And if you think about it just in like more figuratively, so you create an emergency situation. You tell your body, like, oh, I'm under threat or under attack, and I actually can't. I'm getting really stressed. That's not a comfortable situation. So then your body wants to adapt and get fitter and stronger to be prepared for such emergencies, so that it has all the energy, the power it needs to, say, run from that tiger or fight for your life. And that's what triggers the physiological response, and that's what makes you fitter and stronger. There's some other things that happen. So it's basically it improves oxygen delivery and oxygen consumption. So oxygen consumption is around mitochondria and mitochondrial mass and mitochondrial function. And oxygen delivery, that's about plasma volume, capillarization of the muscle, about peak cardiac flow and how much blood your heart can pump in one stroke. And studies have shown that all of that gets improved and increased through those two 20-second sprints.
Which is almost too good to be true.
It gets more crazy than that. Studies have even shown that if you do more or longer sprints, you don't get additional benefits, but the benefits actually decline. Now, that is really confusing because for most exercise, there's a dose-response relationship. And the more
in terms of oxygen delivery and consumption, or what,
yeah,
what's
exactly.
The, what's
and,
the,
and okay. fitness benefit. Yeah. So VO2 max improvement. So what appears to be the case is that 2 to 3 20-second sprints is the sweet spot. But then if you add more or longer sprints, the VO2 max improvement actually reduces and gets less. And again, this is not fully understood, but what researchers believe to be the case is that if you know you have to do like 4, 6, or 10 sprints, and they are like 30 or 40 seconds, you pace yourself. You don't go all out.
You don't go all out. Yeah. Yeah.
So going all out is really quite hard. And so 20 seconds is, in fact, your absolute peak power, you can only hold for a fraction of a second. Mm-hmm. And then you fatigue throughout the sprint. But even psychologically, it seems to be very difficult. If you know, oh, I have to do this like 5 times, 6 times, 7 times, you just wouldn't go all out. You would hold back and you would go like 90% or 80%. But the benefits really come from going 100%. And so therefore, 2 to 3 20-second sprints seems to be the sweet spot.
I am incredibly bullish on sauna as a therapy for recovery, heart health, and overall aging well. I personally decided on an infrared sauna from Sunlighten because of the range of far wavelengths and near infrared wavelengths that it offers. Saunas help with detoxification and rejuvenation to rid your body of toxins. It helps with heart health by improving circulation, reducing blood pressure, and helping keep the arteries supple. It helps with muscle recovery by easing the tension and soreness to recover faster, and of course, stress reduction. With the warmth and the relaxation of sitting in a sauna, it's crucial for hormonal balance and achieving a state of well-being necessary for a strong physique and a strong mind. If you visit sunlighten.com/better and use code better to get a discount, that is sunlighten, sunlighten.com/better, and use code better at checkout.
I want to come back to VO2 max because I think this is a really important consideration for everybody at any age, but particularly as we get into that third and fourth decade of life, because I don't think that people fully comprehend how much it falls off a cliff if you're not doing anything about it. But let's just come back to that for a moment. You mentioned you have this mobilization of glycogen primarily, well, we'll say in the legs, let's say. And you're only using a fraction of it in order to meet the demand of this super maximal intensity, like this all out sprint. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what happens to that glycogen then? Does it just get repackaged, put back in the muscle and in the liver from where it came? Like what happens to the glycogen after it's mobilized?
So it gets partly broken down. A lot gets converted into lactate and then utilized elsewhere in the body, in your metabolic processes. So lactate gets used in the brain a lot, has actually beneficial effects there. And while you burn very few calories during the sprint, you actually see a quite meaningful afterburn effect. So it's called excess post-exercise oxygen consumption, EPOC. Over the next 90, 1.5 to 3 hours after the exercise. So when we measured the calorie consumption from the exercise, it's actually 2/3 of the calorie consumption happens in the 2 hours after you've come off the bike. So therefore, even though you don't sweat and you don't get terribly hot, you do get actually a meaningful amount of calorie burn as well. And that's just the body basically processing through all these metabolic half products and waste products afterwards.
You know, what's interesting about that is every cardio machine where, let's say you've been if you're talking about low intensity steady state, right, where you're just doing lifts, I've always been taught, and feel free to redirect me here if I'm incorrect, that all of the calorie burn happens while you're on the bike or while you're on the elliptical or whatever. And then the minute you step off of it, the calorie burn stops. But this actually sounds like the complete opposite, where you have this really short delta, short time on the bike. And then the post, the epoch that you're talking about, that exercise, that post-exercise oxygen consumption increases. So you have this increase in caloric burn after you get off the bike, which is something that we actually see a lot in resistance training, right? Because you're not, you know, most of the time you're not going all out. It's like maybe 65% of your max heart rate, let's say. But it's the adaptation to the resistance training over time that actually makes you metabolically healthy, that changes your body composition. And it, the Carol bike and this science sounds much more aligned with maybe the way that resistance training works versus maybe a traditional cardio machine where you're on there for 50 minutes, you're doing, you know, a steady state workout, and then you burn, I don't know, whatever you burn, 200 calories, whatever it is. And then it just stops once you get off of it.
So yes, that's right. I would add to that, that, so in normal moderate intensity cardio, you see a little bit of epoch as well. So the figures I've seen in research was about 10% of the total calorie consumption from a moderate intensity workout happens after the workout as you recover. But it's very modest. With rehit and these maximum intensity sprints, about two-thirds, 67% of the calorie consumption happens after the workout. Wow. And it's not so much that your calorie burn goes up. It's just that the time is so much longer. So it's also a tail that tails off, but the sprints are so short that even though that's your peak, the area under the curve is much, much smaller than in the tail. So you have this tail for 90 to 180 minutes. And that in total is just a greater level of calorie consumption than what happens in the actual exercise. And then the other thing is, yes, absolutely. So the forces you exert and the power you exert during sort of these sprint intervals, they are very high, and depends on who you are and how big you are and so on. But we see some very high forces, and they are in fact relevant also for the development of strength. So we see that in our data, and there's just been, so the experimental phase of that study has been completed. I've had some early slides of the results. Western University, Colorado did a study on the strength benefits, and you see, in fact, also a strength improvement, a meaningful strength improvement in leg strength measured in one rep max of your squat with this sprint exercise. The primary benefits clearly is VO2 max and metabolic health, but you you also see a substantial improvement in lower body strength, so in leg strength.
Which is fabulous for someone like me who's trying to squat the equivalent of a baby elephant. So if you tell me I'm going to increase my strength, I'm going to be on the Carol bike every day. And that was actually my question is, in my onboarding, I was working with one of your, I believe they're exercise physiologists, and he was saying to me, you know, the goal for you, you know, and I was telling him some of the goals that I had was that you can actually get on the bike every day. Like the downtime is much lower than even, let's say, resistance training. Like I can't squat every day because I've torn up the muscle fibers. I have to wait for them to recover, et cetera, et cetera. But one of the nice things that I appreciated was that you can actually do this every single day if you wanted. And so maybe speak a little bit about the recovery time or, you know, specifically with rehit, because I know that there's other programs on the bike and we'll talk about in a moment, but what's the frequency with which someone can be working on their sprints, working on their speed and working on the super maximal or this rehit program or protocol?
So one thing just to say, like our users, it's quite a diverse group, and we have while people might think, oh, minimal effective dose of exercise and only 5 minutes workouts, that is for people who don't like workouts or who don't have time. We serve that audience as well. And very clearly we have users who just want to do as little as possible, get it done, and that's fine. But in fact, we have many users who really enjoy exercise and who do a lot of exercise and just want basically an optimal a solution for cardio that they can add into their routine. So we're not just for either one or the other camp. Reduced exertion HIIT, as it says in the name, the level of exertion is so low that you can do this every day of the week. And in fact, so I don't do it 7 days a week, but I do it 5 days a week usually. I do it Monday to Friday, just as a habit. I don't have to think about it. And then on the weekend, I do weight training, a longer session, maybe go for a run. But there's nothing that would stop you from doing this every day if you want to. The benefits, however, will also materialize already from doing it 3 times a week. And that depends a little bit what you're more interested in. If you're interested just in cardiorespiratory fitness and VO2 max, there are studies that have shown that 2 times per week is enough. If you're also interested in metabolic health, then the suggestion is three times a week is better, and maybe even more often. But the research has been done with 3 times a week and has shown very substantial improvements. So just maybe to put some numbers in that. So we saw in 8 weeks a VO2 max improvement of around 12%, 12.3%. That's a risk score for developing metabolic diseases. It's called the METS-Z score. That went down by 62%. Now, both of these changes are very significant. They're not subtle at all. The fitness effect you can feel very clearly. An equivalent to that METS-Z score reduction would be taking a medication like metformin. So those are very substantial physiological changes. Also for lower
without the poisoning of the
poisoning
of the mitochondria that happens with metformin. I always laugh. I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt you, but I always just laugh a little bit at some of these like longevity bros that are like, I'm doing everything. I'm taking rapamycin. I'm taking metformin. It's like, why don't you just double down on your cardiorespiratory fitness? Yeah, like at some point we're all going to die. Right. So I understand, you know, the benefit in increasing the health span and of course the years that you have making them as healthy as you can. But why would you take metformin? I just like you're poisoning your mitochondria. It's crazy. But I digress.
That's all right. No. Yeah. I do appreciate actually that interjection. I mean, I do a bunch of things, and for some, I just do them on good faith. To be honest, I don't really feel anything. Mm-hmm. But if it's taking certain supplements or so, it feels like a relatively small investment. And if it may be good, then okay.
Sure.
But exercise is really very fundamental, very, very noticeable. It's the opposite of subtle. I mean, the only thing that I think has, better ROI or similar ROI is just sleep. Yeah. The difference between having a good night's sleep and not is massive and immediate. So very, very noticeable. Still not sure why people don't sleep. But anyway, so that is kind of, if you talk about hacks, I don't know whether sleep can be called a hack, but after sleep, I think exercise is really the most powerful, most immediate, noticeable, highest ROI investment that you could make into your health and longevity.
Yeah. And there's no side effects. I mean, you know, side effects may include better mood, better body composition, as you were saying, increased VO2 max 12% in 8 weeks. I wanted to touch on VO2 max.
May I say? I know you like lifting, right?
I love it.
I actually also love lifting. It's since my teenage boys go to the gym, do it very intensively. And they, of course you can injure yourself and so on. So that does happen. And in fact, in a recent deadlift, I thought I maybe overdid it a little bit. The injury risk on rehit is minimal. So a bike is a very, very safe form of exercise. And we've designed it to be very, very safe. So it is something you can do every day. And there should be really no negative side effects. So it's a simple, easy, safe way of staying fit and healthy.
One more feature about the Carol bike that I wanted to touch on before we tuck into VO2 max is, you know, someone listening might say, well, okay, I get it. I need to do these re-hit exercises. I need to work on my speed, which is actually, little side note, we'll come back to this, one of the first things that you lose as you age. So we often think about sarcopenia, osteopenia, dynapenia, which is fatty infiltration of the muscle, brittle bones, and then loss of strength with dynapenia. But one of the first things we actually lose is speed as our type 2 fibers get as we age, we tend to see more type 1. We either lose the type 2 fiber entirely, like use it or lose it kind of principle, or we see a conversion of type 2 fibers, which are our speed, the fast twitch fibers that you're talking about that are engaged in these re-hit speed drills. We see them being converted to type 1. So we need to be thinking about speed. We'll come back to that. But someone listening might be like, okay, great, I get it. I need to be doing these re-hit protocols. Why can't somebody, and I'll just play devil's advocate here, why do you need the Carol bike to do that? Why do you need a specialized piece of equipment? Why can't you just go out on the street and then run 20 seconds? I mean, I think I know the answer, but why can't you just run for 20 seconds, stop for 3 minutes, and then do it again?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, there's really two parts to it. One, maybe just a little anecdote. When we came across first the science of re-hit, we fell in love overnight and went out straight away. The next day we heard about it to buy a regular exercise bike and try to replicate it. And we found that it was very difficult to get right. Sweated like hell, and it just felt overall like a very unsatisfying and very difficult exercise. We contacted the researchers behind Rehit and asked them, like, what are we doing wrong? How can we make this actually a as nice as possible experience? And the first thing they told us was, well, you need a special bike.
Otherwise, now, you're constantly adjusting for the watts. Like, you constantly have to change. You have someone else. You need another person there who's constantly changing the power, right?
That's right. That's right. So the research, obviously, the research is older than Carol Bike, because we started after we've heard about the research. In the labs, they have equipment that's first very expensive. It's like $15,000, $20,000. And that's operated by a second person. So you need a lab technician to control the resistance for you. And that is linked to What does it actually take for you to reach your maximum power and your maximum intensity? And the three things are necessary. One, you need to basically speed up to a really high cadence, so really high pedal speed at a low resistance. So you want to be at, I don't know, 150, 200 RPM at a low resistance. Then your optimal resistance has to be applied, and it has to be applied at the right time and instantly. And then you reach your peak power and you fatigue throughout the sprint. And that's the recipe to make this simple and reap the benefits that people have demonstrated in the lab. Now, on a normal exercise bike, if you think about it, you pedal at high speed and then you dial in with a knob the resistance, and you don't know what the right resistance is, and it's not easy to apply it instantly. It's just very, very hard. So maybe if you have a personal trainer by your side or something, you can get, you know, something that's
close to,
maybe not quite as good. Possibly we found it very hard, and certainly that's not how the research was done. And because we found it so hard, we developed Carol Bike, spent the last 10 years on optimizing it and really making it a perfect, an optimal solution for Rehit. And I think that's validated that many of the leading labs now actually do research on our bikes, because they're A, more affordable, and they also don't need a second person next to their subjects. So it's much easier for them to do their research. Another feature is that rather than it being always the same, we've developed algorithms, that's the AI behind the in the bike, that continually personalize and optimize the workout for you. And that means, A, we can cater for a huge diversity of different users. So from former Olympic gold medalists and real athletes to people like my mother, who's 80 years old and has mobility issues, but who uses the Carol bike 3 times per week. Because we can tailor and optimize the workout for a wide range of different kind of abilities and ages. And that's just something that's hard to find in other equipment.
Yeah. My son also, I'll say, who's a soccer player. So speed is really important to him as well as leg strength. Mm-hmm. I have him on the Carol bike as well. So he's awesome. He's 12. So he's, you know, in the younger cohort. So when we're comparing his data versus his peers, mm-hmm. he's always like, oh, I'm doing so well, you know, but that like his primary reason for that is he's mm-hmm. like, I'm going to be in the, you know, we're in Canada. So he's like, I'm going to be in the MLS, you know, the Major League Soccer here, maybe the Premier League one day if he's good enough, but you know, he wants leg strength and he wants speed. Both of those things, Carol is going to help develop for him.
Yeah, exactly.
And let's talk about speed. Let's talk about speed a moment, because this is something that I don't think people realize is happening, is as we are aging, one of the first things that we lose is speed. That conversion that I was either the loss of the type 2 fiber entirely. So just as a brief review, obviously, for you, you are aware of this, but type 1 fibers are the ones that, you know, you're puttering around the house, you're gardening, you're going for a walk, like they're slow twitch, they're highly oxidative. The type 2 fibers, which you've already described to some degree, are, well, there's two types, type 2A and type 2B. 2B is the one that we're really focusing on here because they're highly glycolytic, right? Like they, when we are superseding the oxygen requirements of the cell, let's say in a sprint on the bike or like some type of burst or explosive movement, it's the type 2B fibers that we are engaging with. And as we age, and so this is for the demographic that tends to listen to this show, is a woman in perimenopause. So she's like 35 to like call it 52-ish. Even, you know, I have 55 and 65-year-old women that send me messages all the time who I love. But it's that woman who doesn't realize that over the course of her 40s, that she is going to be losing speed and power and output at a much higher level than she was when she was 20, right? Like we don't realize that we lose speed first, and then dynapenia, where we have loss of strength, kind of, you know, that sort of follows us later on. But speak a little bit about the importance of maintaining speed and these type 2B fibers, let's say, as we're aging, and how what are some things that we can be thinking about in terms of our programming, let's say with the Carol bike and others, how we can be trying to maintain that.
So you've covered a lot there already, and it's absolutely true. So you lose muscle mass at a much slower rate than you lose strength, than you lose speed. So there's basically a hierarchy of how fast you drop your ability and how much of your ability and capacity you lose over time. And this happens from around when you're 30, and hence one way to offset that is to specifically train these types of fibers with sprint exercise, and trying to offset that decline, if you want, and trying to delay the aging process there as much as we can. Similar thing also happens with VO2 max, so your aerobic capacity and your ability to utilize and burn oxygen. There we also see from age 30 about a 10% reduction in VO2 max per decade. And so that obviously adds up a lot. And if you think about the...
Did you say 10% per decade? 10% per decade.
Yes,
for VO2 exactly. Max. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. And so if you think about what I said earlier, that you can in only 8 weeks build an increase of 12%.
It's like 12 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Like you've gained 12 years.
Exactly, exactly. So it doesn't mean you're 12 years younger, but certainly in terms of how you feel and how you feel, I don't know, chasing after a ball or running up the stairs or whatever you do where you need your fitness, it's very noticeable. Feeling 12 years younger and or 12 years fitter. I don't want to say 12 years younger. Yeah, maybe 12 years younger in terms of fitness is very noticeable. It's not subtle and it doesn't stop there. So you continue. Obviously we don't all in our 50s become Olympic athletes suddenly. It's a very noticeable improvement. So what the research shows, like eight weeks for about 12%. And then in the next, around 12 weeks, you can get up to 20%. And that's very, very significant. I mean,
that
two
is
decades.
Significant. Yeah. That is
exactly.
Very significant.
And VO2 max, is probably the most, important physiological marker and predictor of future health. So, if you had, the chance to influence any of the, like anything about your physiology by that level, like VO2 max is the most important target that you could think of.
Yeah. And just for those listening that have never heard this term before, this is just a measure of physical fitness, right? So it's an aggregate of your cardiovascular work. It's an aggregate of your weight training. And I would say there's been, so many papers, but written on VO2 max, the importance of it as a metric to track over time. But I would say every paper that I've read on it just points to this idea of all cause mortality, all reasons why you might succumb, all the diseases that you might succumb to is inversely proportional to your VO2 max. Meaning that the better your VO2 max is, the fitter you are, let's say, the lower your chance of dying from cardiovascular, cerebrovascular, type 2, diseases, type 2 diabetes, cancer, all of these different things. So VO2 max is something that we definitely want to be paying attention to, I'd say all through the life, but I think more people are, in our 40s when we're like, oh, actually we are about midlife now, we become a little bit more concerned about our health. And so in our 40s, it's like, oh yeah, what might my VO2 max, and of course, my audience being perimenopausal are dealing with some of the hormonal changes that kind of come in their 40s and 50s as well. And so the affect and the motivation, is further, attenuated when they're trying to sort of overcome that limbic resistance, let's say. So let's talk a little bit about what's
so true, what you say there. And we see that in just when we look at the people who purchase our product. It's not just, but it's mainly people, say from 35, 40 up who start to become health conscious.
Yeah.
So I think people in their 20s who, maybe just, take their health as a given and then want to look as good as possible and as hench as possible, go to the gym, exercise for different reasons, or they want to perform as well as possible in their sport, but they exercise often for a different reason than people my age who may have had, some early little wake-up calls and health warnings that their blood pressure was maybe a little bit high or their blood sugar readings were not what they wanted, and then actually do exercise with a specific purpose. And that is, I think, where we can really help and where the Carol bike is a wonderful solution. And maybe just to add, when we talked about the importance of VO2 max and how you can feel 10 years, 20 years younger in terms of fitness and how it's inversely correlated to all-cause mortality. Sadly, and this is true for all type of exercise. Yeah, it's super beneficial when you do it, but unfortunately, you also lose the benefits quite quickly if you don't do it. So you can gain a lot of fitness in 8 weeks, but then in another 8 weeks, if you don't do it, you lose it again. And that means you really have to find something that you can stick to and that you can continue doing for the long haul and that fits into your life. And so, you know, whatever makes you tick. Yeah. If music and celebrity instructors work for you, good, great. But if that's just the temporary, you know, excitement, then maybe that's not the right thing. And, so we feel that having a really short and effective workout that you can build a habit out of and you can make a habit out of it is maybe a great solution for many people out there.
And so when we're talking about, so you were mentioning the study, 12% increase in 8 weeks, and then a further, they got up to 20%, I think, in the following mm-hmm. 12 weeks. Was that protocol just based on rehit, or were they doing some combination of zone two training as well? Because when we think about, and I'll just define mm-hmm. this for the listener a little bit, you know, VO2 max is basically the gas exchange in the lungs, the pump efficiency, the gas exchange in the muscle bed, right? So you're looking at air to lungs, lung to blood, blood from the heart and the tissues, oxygen from the blood to the tissues. So what are the, you know, that's kind of what's comprised of like your VO2 max. So when we're looking at improving VO2 max, is it just mm-hmm. as simple as this rehit 2 to 3 times a week and we follow that over 8 weeks or 12 weeks or however long, or is there some other types of training, like zone two training, where we're using more of those mm-hmm. type 1, type 2A fibers that are more oxidative in their nature?
Yeah, sure. So there's several things to say about that. First, yes, those studies that I cited were just the rehit protocol 3 times a week.
Wow.
So it's very effective and you get a fantastic benefit from doing just that. Many of those studies are made with subjects that are either have a sedentary lifestyle, which is like 95% of Americans, or who are moderately active. There's another category. If you're really like highly trained athlete, there's just been less research done with just that because they have usually like much, much more intensive and comprehensive workout schedules. So it's a bit harder to say definitively what it does to highly trained athletes. But certainly in the kind of normal population, that is, that's what the research found. And we have plenty of studies on there, both that were done with Carobike and that were done with other equipment. Like these research, ergometers that I referred to earlier. Then about zone two training. So that's gained a lot of traction. And at this stage, I would say primarily popular traction. So the whole concept of zone-based training, if you search on that in PubMed, you wouldn't actually find terribly many studies on that because research usually gets done at lactic threshold or ventilatory threshold. And so if you searched for like robust academic studies on zone two training, you wouldn't find terribly much. But it certainly has gotten a lot of traction. And we would never advocate against it because we think exercise is good. And now it's just a question. How much time can you invest basically into your cardio exercise? If you have limited time available, then I think the highest ROI activity you can do is rehit and do that 3 times a week. If you have more time available, yeah, then absolutely. I would suggest zone two training is a fantastic addition to it. And I'm sure it has like additional stimuli that go beyond and will create further benefits. I have no doubt about that. But if you just had time for one thing, or you had only 15 minutes per week or so, or in fact, you really, really enjoy lifting weights and you just want to get your cardio done as quickly as possible, then rehit would be the first thing I would suggest you do. And then if you want to go beyond and further, absolutely do other types of HIIT or do zone two training. It's a great addition to it. And in fact, while While the Carol bike is obviously ultra specialized and optimized for rehit, it is actually one of the most versatile bikes on the market because it has a range of different workouts on it. And you can do zone-based training absolutely on it. It has special programs for that. And it can also be used with quite a variety of, well, the largest variety of third-party apps.
Yeah.
So there's a whole another community out there of ambitious amateur cyclist athletes who love Swift and KinoMap and so on, and who wear their Lycra shorts. And you can do that all because we're compatible with that ecosystem too. So there's really loads of it. And if you want to do Peloton classes on it, with Peloton Digital works very nicely on our bike too.
Love that. I use Zwift. I'm a awesome. Zwifter as yeah. well. So no, I will use it on the Carol bike.
And from time to time, it's really fun because there's many people on there. Yeah. And you can tag along to some people and cycle there through. Mm-hmm.
I like to try to keep up with the French. They're always fine. Whenever I see a little yes, flag, exactly. someone is French, exactly. I'm like, oh, exactly. I'll just cycle with them today.
And if I do have time for that, then absolutely. That's also something I enjoy. I don't get that in every week, but every once in a while, yes, absolutely.
And one of the other things that I like, so you were talking about some of the different programs on the Carol bike. Personally, one of the ones that I really like is your fat burning programs. So these are, I'm sure you're like, yeah, she's a woman. No doubt, no surprise there. But I love it because it's 20 seconds on, 10 seconds off, 20 seconds yeah. on, and you're just going and go. It's almost like it's Tabata yeah. style, I guess, but it's not true Tabata.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's like one-to-one. It's a little bit more than one-to-one, but it's fabulous. It's
8 on, 12 off. And the sprints are at, so they're linked to your rehit resistance. So we basically measure your fitness in the rehit workouts. And then the other sprint protocols are linked to that and also kind of get harder or easier depending on your current fitness level. And that's one, I mean, that burns a phenomenal amount of calories on and off the bike. So you sweat buckets.
You sweat, you are going to be sweating after that one. Yeah, it is a great workout.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's not one to skip the shower afterwards. So it's a different thing. And here's the thing. So I said earlier that most of our customers are in the maybe 35 to 65 bracket. And really like 40 to 60. That's kind of our sweet spot. It's 50-50 male, female. So there's not, we're not just for women or just for men. It's pretty much pretty balanced, but the fat burn ride, that's done predominantly, or there's a majority, like that's like 60-70% of people who do that are actually women. And maybe it's the name or maybe it's, I don't know, but, I think it speaks a little bit to what are people's motivations when they do the bike, when they buy a bike or do workouts on the bike. And it's a great program to burn a ton of calories and have a ton of afterburn. It wouldn't be my first. So we say the baseline should be your 2 to 3 rehit rides. And then if weight management is an important goal for you, then you add in 1 or 2 or 3 of those into your weekly workout program. So it's an add-on to if weight management is really one of your priorities.
Yeah, and I'll say that workout is not a joke. It is great. And there's another one, it's just escaping me now, where it's I think it's just looking at your FTP. I think it's looking at your your threshold. And I remember
that's very hard.
It was very hard. And I was trying to maintain, I only got to about 25 minutes, maybe even less than that. It was like 23, 24 minutes. And I was trying to maintain whatever, I can't remember what my FTP was at the time. Mm-hmm. It was like 300, maybe 400. And I just thought I was going to die. But in the best way, and I say that in the best way, because I think that there is something, although we see all the benefits that you're talking about physiologically from a metabolic perspective, VO2 max, all that, in a short amount of time, I do think one of the things that exercise at least has given me, so maybe this is just my own opinion, is getting comfortable with being uncomfortable, right? Mm-hmm. So when you're doing an FTP type of workout, it's basically trying to measure like what's your maximum threshold potential that you can sustain over, it's supposed to be an hour, but you know, I haven't made it to the hour yet. I've, you know, made it to just under 25 minutes.
And that's fine for measuring it. So you can do either 20 minutes in one go or 2 times 8 minutes with a break in between. So there are several programs on the bike that quite precisely measure your FTP and then help you with the zone-based training. So that's all built in. But yes, you're absolutely right. The FTP tests going 20 minutes at your limit, that's hard.
It's hard, but there's something beautiful about knowing, because it's like disproportionately, it's not all like, it's not all 20 minutes are terrible. It's like the last 5 minutes are awful. You know, it's like, because it just sort of like ramps you up, right? So it's like, you're like, oh, I can do 200 watts. Oh, I, yeah, we'll get 250. Yeah, I can. And then you're at whatever number and you're like, oh my God. It's like disproportionately, you know, the last 10% of the workout is the worst part of it. Yeah. But I do think that there's some, you know, coming back to the psychology, I know we've been talking about psychology a bit with the bike today. I think that there's something really important about knowing that you're going to be uncomfortable and then getting to the point where you are uncomfortable and then just doing the best with the resources that you have at the time. Like there's something really empowering about saying, yeah, this is going to be uncomfortable. It's going to suck. And I'm going to do it anyway. And you know, kind of seeing where you go and see how that changes over time. So I'm not saying that that's what everyone should do all the time, every week. That's not a, I don't even know if you, like, what would be your recommendation for an FTP ride? Would that be once a week? Would it be once a month?
When you're interested, really. I mean, I know that there are people who advocate going to kind of doing VO2 max type training where you for a sustained period operate at VO2 max and reach really your absolute maximum aerobic capacity about once a month. I do that less often. I do that if I do it every quarter, it's probably that's more realistic. Mm-hmm. Just because it's another quite precise measurement of your fitness. Now we do have you with every rehit ride, you get your fitness score, which is which has been modeled to track VO2 max. But with the FTP measurement, you get basically an actual measurement. So it's just another angle. And if you're interested and you really want to quantify your progress, that's a very good tool to do that.
The algorithm, does it take into account heart rate recovery, like how fast your heart rate recovers and your peak heart rate? Is that in the calculations in the algorithm?
That's exactly what the fitness score does, that it looks at what's the power you generate in those 2 20-second sprints, how high does your heart rate go up, and how fast does it recover? So in simplified terms, it would be something like power per heartbeat. And as your heart gets stronger, you can push out more power with one heartbeat. And then there is some more complicated calculation behind it to make it track as closely as possible your VO2 max. So it is really something fundamentally different because it's an anaerobic workout and it measures basically your response and your recovery from an anaerobic workout. But it nevertheless tracks your aerobic capacity because we've designed it that way. And so it's not the same, but it tracks your progress very well.
Awesome. So for women who are listening, so we have, you know, primarily, as I've mentioned a few times now, perimenopausal women, what would be an ideal protocol, let's say, if they're like, okay, I know I need to work on my speed. I know I need to train up my VO2 max. What would be something that in an ideal world, assuming that there's no injuries, they're cleared for exercise, that they can, you know, they can do the rehit, let's say, several times a week. What would be a protocol that you might recommend to a woman for increasing her VO2 max on the carb bike?
Yeah. So very simple. Baseline for everybody is 3 rehit rides per week. And that will help improve your VO2 max very markedly in a short period of time. And then it depends a little bit what your further exercise goals are. If weight management is one of your primary considerations, and let's face it, that's one reason, like we want to be fit and healthy, but we also want to be good looking. And weight management seems to be important. Then these fat burn rides with kind of more and shorter sprints and where you also sweat a lot, add 1 or 2 of those in per week. And I, I'm basically following as to what is proposed there by some of the leading voices in the field, really. If you're looking for optimal longevity, mitochondrial function, zone two training would be a great thing. So maybe then do the 2 to 3 rehit rides per week, but also have, say, one or two longer zone two sessions. The suggestion there is to go even 60 to 90 minutes in those. So really have a prolonged period that help train your mitochondria in a different way and have basically a mitochondrial efficiency through in a longer workout. And then it's if you want to quantify your progress every so often, an FTP test might be a good idea. And then for joy and fun and other things, you may throw in the occasional Peloton session or Swift or KinoMap where you can cycle in different routes. And then obviously we've now only talked about cardio. There's like, I would always suggest that people should do strength training as well. That's just part of it. And some level of mobility training. But I'm not an expert on those. And so that's for others to cover. But Carol Bike would help you get the cardio component and to some extent strength and speed for the legs in a very, very time efficient way.
Yeah, I love that. And that's very similar to how I'm using the Carol Bike now. So when I do an upper body lift day, those are the days that I'm going to do a longer bike ride. So I'll do, usually the lift happens in the morning and then I can pop on the bike, do my rehit, and then maybe I'll do a longer zone two when it's an upper body. I don't do the zone two training on leg day, like lower body days. I don't do it, but I will do the rehit because it's, as you mentioned, it's like two times 20, it's all out, but I'll put a couple of hours in between the leg training session and then the rehit. I'll do it in the afternoon. Which is when I typically get on the bike, is when I get the kids home and then my son sees me. He's like, oh yeah, I'm going to, after you, it's my turn. So then he'll get on and he'll do his thing as well. Yeah. So I just wanted to, you know, thank you for your time, your science, your focus state. And this is, as I mentioned at the top of the hour, this is, I don't really get excited by cardio. You know, like this, my love lies in weights. That's just kind of my bias. And the Carol Bike has really changed my opinion on it. I really, really, really love the science behind it. I love how easy it is, the limbic resistance. I don't have to ride the motivation wave to get on the bike. I can always do it. And then I'm also seeing, just personally, I'm seeing spillover into my family. So, you know, my son, as I mentioned, who's playing soccer, my husband, who I know has been watching me prepare for our conversation. And I've been talking to him about VO2 max and all, you know, how it declines. And he's like, oh, wow. He's like, and the Carol Bike can do all of that? And I'm like, yeah. So I feel like in some ways I'm like a walking advertisement for this bike, but it's because I'm so excited about the science and the ease of which we can deliver some of these results. So just wanted to thank you for, you know, putting, like making the bike, making it available at such an affordable price point. I know listeners of Better, I don't have the discount code off the top of my head, but it'll be in the show notes. There is discounts for people who listen to the podcast if they're interested in purchasing it as well.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe one thing I might say, because even after we've discussed it now for an hour, people might think, oh, maybe that's too good to be true. So we don't have we don't have showrooms. We are in some of the leading biohacking facilities or performance studios like Upgrade Labs. But what we do offer in recognition of that is we offer a really industry-leading risk-free home trial. So when you purchase the bike, you have 100 days. You have 100 days to try it. And if it's not for you, you just give it back. We collect it, you get a full refund. And so that's a fairly low risk way of trying the bike. We're so confident that you'll love it. And 100 days is definitely enough to feel the difference. 8 weeks, that's 56 days. You have a lot more than that. So you'll feel the difference. And it's that's the easiest way to experience it.
That's very generous. I was not aware of that. That's awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much for that. All right. We will make sure that all the details for anyone who's interested in the Carol bike is in the show notes as well. Again, Ulrich, thank you so much for your time today. Really, really appreciated having this chat.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. And I must give you the obligatory legal and medical disclaimer here. This podcast, Better with Dr. Stephanie, is for general information only. And the advice, recommendations we discuss do not replace medicine, chiropractic, or any other primary healthcare provider's advice, treatment, or care. In the consumption of this podcast, there is no doctor-patient relationship that has been formed, and the use and implementation of the information discussed are at the sole discretion of the listener. The information and opinions shared on this podcast are not intended to be a substitute for primary care, diagnosis, or treatment. In other words, guys, be smart about this. Take it with a grain of salt. Take this information to your primary healthcare provider and have a discussion with him or her to make the best choice that is for you. Remember, I am a doctor, but I am not your doctor. And these conversations are meant for educational purposes only.